My guest at this time is Christopher Horner. He's a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute here in Washington. We've turned to him many times as the Obama administration has tried to advance what it believes ought to be the right policies on environmental regulation, and that includes climate change. Over the past day or two, there's been a lot of discussion of the president proclaiming that there's been a major agreement between the United States and China on plans to cut carbon pollution. The president's Twitter account tweeted, "This is huge. The United States and China have just agreed on an ambitious new joint plan to cut carbon pollution." The CNN version of the story reads, "In a historic climate change deal, the U.S. and Chinese presidents announced both countries will curb their greenhouse gas emissions over the next two decades. Under the agreement, the United States would cut its 2005 level of carbon emissions by 26% to 28% before the year 2025. China would peak its carbon emissions by 2030 and will also aim to get 20% of its energy from zero carbon emission sources by the same year." So, Chris, how historic is this really?
Well, I will tell you, I wrote an article years ago pointing out that every single agreement to meet again next year in the Kyoto Treaty process was hailed as a historic climate pact, and the details were generally all unenforceable and didn't amount to much more than agreeing to meet next year. What the president did with China is, again, not enforceable. They're calling it politically binding, which is to say he's trying to put the courts, the next president, and Congress in a difficult position by this effort to embed his EPA regulations and something larger. Now, that's pretty historic. We haven't seen that effort before. It's trying to use something called customary international law. But as far as an agreement goes, it was a promise, really to ourselves. While China said business as usual for at least 15 more years. So to the extent it was a deal, it was a very raw deal for us. It was not legally binding in any sense. It really didn't amount to anything more than what he announced, what he's going to promise next year when Kyoto 2 is agreed.
Chris, the obvious implication by the way that the White House is responding to this agreement is that this was shared sacrifice, to use another term that they like to use a lot. And basically, both sides have agreed to make major steps here. That doesn't seem to be the way most people, including yourself, are reading this.
No, that's the reason is it promised massive reductions, which nobody knows how you could get to barring serious economic collapse on the part of the U.S. And this is even after the hydrofracking boom. Even assume you kill coal, nobody knows how he gets, if you kill it dead, nobody knows how you get to where he's talking about, which of course will be someone else's problem. But meanwhile, the Chinese are setting up, it's called a baseline. Their year against measuring anything is 15 years down the road. It's business as usual. And they agreed to nothing. So this is, you sort of want to be on the other side of negotiating tables with people who view things like this as victories. It was hardly that.
Chris, if the next president is, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, really, if China clearly doesn't care about this, who's it politically binding with? If they have no intention really of honoring their end of the agreement, if the next president decides they don't want anything to do with this either, what's to stop them?
Well, of course, China didn't agree to do anything negative to themselves. They said business as usual for 15 years, and then we'll see. They said we promised to try after that. This is about politically binding the U.S. The president sees his administration winding down. They invented a term called politically binding, actually in the Kyoto context, after it was clear the U.S. will not ratify such a treaty. So what he's seeking to do is bind the next president and the next president's EPA, this Congress and the courts, to say, you know what, you really can't undo my EPA rules. They're now part of something larger. They're embedded in a promise to the world, and I'd like the courts to recognize that. And while it sounds crazy, it's called customary international law, and there's always a chance. And then there's definitely a desire to repeat the political campaign. A lot of people have forgotten this, but there was a very nasty political climate here about Kyoto until 9/11, when most people forgot about that. They're trying to recreate that, because it was clumsily handled by President Bush, and I suppose they're hoping that this is clumsily handled by President Obama's successor.
You've mentioned now that they're trying to tie the hands of Congress, but would this be an agreement normally that Congress would have to ratify in some way, or is this just another executive action, essentially, that the president either does have the power to do or thinks he has the power to do?
You just raised probably the most intriguing and disturbing aspect of this, Greg, and that is for more than 20 years, the executive, no matter what party he's from, and Congress, the Senate, have recognized that this is part of the treaty process. It needs to be part of the treaty process. We have a system, and this goes through it. Now that the treaty process makes it clear that they never would ratify such an agreement, the president said, this isn't a treaty. Next year won't be a treaty simply because I'm calling it not a treaty. Well, of course this is something the Senate would have to ratify. It's why Kyoto was a treaty. It's why the treaty before that was a treaty. It's why all of these have been planned to be treaties. So what they're doing is sidestepping the system once again. He sidestepped it to without legislation, regulate. And now he's hoping to get a treaty by calling it not a treaty to avoid a loss in the Senate. They're very, very problematic.
Does that give the Senate the prerogative of declaring it a treaty on its own, or does it have to accept something the president submits to them, which is the normal process?
To one extent, yes, and that's a very good way of putting it. What the Senate should do is what they did before Kyoto. There's something called Bird-Hagel, which a lot of people remember. They mischaracterized it as rejecting Kyoto. It was actually a vote before the treaty was agreed, saying, Mr. President, don't go to Kyoto and agree to this. You won't be speaking for the United States if you do. They made Kyoto a dead letter. We never unsigned it because we didn't have to. You can unsign treaties. We didn't Kyoto. Here, they need to. It's a non-binding sense of the Senate resolution. He can't veto it in response to a non-binding non-treaty, saying you're legally free, you're freelancing in a legally meaningless way. You're not speaking for the United States, and no court or other country should take this as an expression of U.S. intent. That is very important, and that is the equivalent of what you characterized, the Senate saying, no, it is a treaty.
So, Chris, in addition to being an expert on environmental policy, you're also an attorney. Ultimately, if the executive branch says it's not a treaty, the legislative branch says it is, it's going to end up in court. Who's got the stronger ground here?
I believe that if the Senate responds with a vote saying, in fact, you're freelancing, then this entire approach that I described, this desire to say, look, we've embedded our rules and promises to the rest of the world, it falls apart. Because quite plainly, the Senate is saying, in fact, you didn't. You are not speaking on behalf of the United States. The Senate has a role in speaking on behalf of the United States under advice and consent, and we're saying that you're speaking without our word. You don't want our advice. You certainly don't get our consent. The Senate could put an end to this with a sense of the Senate resolution, just like they did Kyoto, and I certainly hope they do.
Chris, it seems pretty clear that with the Congress going into Republican hands in the next 2 years, in the final 2 years of his administration, that between this and immigration policy, the president just doesn't seem interested in going through the regular order here. Is that your assessment? Do you think this is essentially what we're going to see from him on issue after issue?
Yes, and here's why. The exclamation mark on that is that this was, in fact, an issue in a lot of campaigns. Somebody named Tom Steyer organized $85 million, which is almost teachers' union money of $100 million, to make climate what they called a winning issue this year. Those candidates all lost. Two survived. No candidate embraced the issue. They were doing this so the candidates wouldn't have to, and the voters rejected it. So given that it was an issue, and it clearly was rejected, just like we have never legislated this mandate, it's quite plain that the president's not interested in what he's interested in those voters who didn't vote, apparently the ones he said he heard, and he was speaking on their behalf in China.
Well, it'll be very interesting to watch how the Senate does react to this. It's already gotten very bad reviews from the incoming majority leader, who is obviously very partial to coal country. So, Chris, thanks very much for your time today, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Greg.
Christopher Horner is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute here in Washington. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.